This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The future of vaccines. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. A year after the first doses of the COVID vaccines rolled out of manufacturing plants, researchers are looking at what's next. Hear what concerns them. Also, a new survey finds kids are losing interest in organized sports. We'll examine the two main reasons. Plus, beyond tree lighting ceremonies, here are the other more unusual festivals around the country not tied to the holidays, and why movies featuring American cowboys have British actors.
Classically trained British actors who are trying on the American accent and the American cowboy for size. Benedict Cumberbatch, who was just nominated for a Golden Globe for his performance as a Montana rancher in The Power of the Dog. Idris Elba, this fall, was another and kind of an outlaw character from the Old West.
Ellen Gamerman at the Wall Street Journal on what's trending in Westerns. Well, a year ago this week, the first COVID-19 vaccines were given out, and more than 450 million shots have been administered across America since. The rapid development and manufacturing has been described as one of the greatest scientific achievements of our time. With all that progress, what's next for vaccines? In-depth analysis from Karen Weintraub, healthcare reporter at USA Today. Karen, where are we right now?
So it looks like we're going to get variant-specific vaccines if we need them. It's still unclear exactly how protective the current vaccines are. But if we need them, they should be around by early spring. The other thing that's going on is efforts to broaden the benefits of the vaccine so that we don't have to worry every time there's a new variant, will the vaccine cover it? The hope is to have a vaccine that covers enough variants that anything that comes along will be protected. And then the next step after that is related viruses. So we've had SARS, we've had SARS-CoV-2. Someday, unfortunately, there may be a 3. The hope is to come up with a vaccine ahead of time that will protect against that.
Isn't that essentially, though, trying to predict variants? Is that possible?
So with the current SARS, it is possible, CoV-2, because we know the genetic code and we know what can change. So that's easier, and that's why that's coming first. It's more of a guessing game, but we've had 3 coronaviruses in the last, since 2003, SARS-1, something called MERS, and SARS-CoV-2. And so we have a sense of some of the diversity there, and they can design vaccines that cover at least some of that diversity. How much is yet to be seen.
All right, so you reference it in your story, too. What about one shot fits all that would cover MERS, SARS, and SARS-CoV-2?
Right. Again, that's the hope, and researchers are working on it. The question, as one guy put it to me, is how soon can we do it? You know, we know we can do it at some point, whether it's 2 years or 20 years. We just don't know. But they are. The federal government has issued a number of multi-million-dollar grants to pursue that research. So hopefully it'll be on the shorter end rather than the longer end of that timeline.
And will it always be a needle? What about like patches and sprays?
No. So, yeah, in fact, there's new data out, a trial that's starting in the UK using air, a puff of air that goes into your arm.
Wow. Into your arm?
And then it's like, it looks like a shot, but it's just shooting air into you. The vaccine is in the air that's kind of shot into your arm. So I don't know what it feels like, but it looks cool. And there may be nasal sprays, and there may be, I've been following for a while, but it still hasn't reached the mainstream, this idea of microneedles, which basically is like a Band-Aid that has hundreds of tiny or thousands of tiny little needles in them. You can't even feel it. You put it on like a Band-Aid, press it into your skin, and it delivers the vaccine.
Jeez. We're speaking with Karen Weintraub, healthcare reporter at USA Today. Her story is called A Year After First COVID-19 Vaccine. Here's what's next for researchers and what worries them. All right, touch on that. What worries researchers?
A couple of things. One is obviously these variants, and they assume that one is going to come along at some point that is going to evade the current vaccines. The current vaccines seem to be pretty good, particularly if you've been boosted, vaccinated and boosted. They seem to still protect against Omicron, but there may be another one. Tau or Zeta, as somebody was saying to me, I do not know the Greek alphabet very well. But you know, there are others that could come along that see no protection from the vaccine. So that's what they're concerned about. The other thing is getting shots in arms. It's one thing to make the vaccine; it's another to deliver it to people. And that decidedly low tech approach may be the focus of a lot of effort in the next year, as we saw with Omicron. These variants pop up where vaccination rates are low. Even in South Africa, a lot of people were infected. Probably 70%, 40% were infected with previous variants, and 30% had been vaccinated. But it's still not enough to prevent new variants from popping up. So we need to get more people vaccinated in order to slow the spread.
That gets to a point somebody made in your story about kind of focusing on the willing, those who are willing to get a shot. Right?
Yeah, so that's the issue in the U.S., that there are some people who just don't want it under any circumstances, but there are still some people who would be willing to get it if they were encouraged to from a trusted messenger, a doctor, a faith leader, somebody in their community. So that's what he's suggesting we focus on. Around the world, there are two different issues, I guess. One is this idea of acceptance, and the other is delivery, that in some lower-income, middle-income countries, they just haven't had access to the vaccine. So one important focus for the next year is going to be providing that access.
Thanks, Karen. Karen Weintraub, healthcare reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, the good and bad of travel over the last 20 years. Dell Technologies' end-of-year sale is the perfect time to upgrade tech. Save big on the latest computers featuring Windows 11 Pro that easily automate workflows. Don't forget to shop servers, storage, and top-brand electronics with savings up to 45% and all with free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor to help you transform your digital workspaces with comprehensive end-to-end solutions. Find the right tech for your business needs at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Well, for a time, veteran Wall Street Journal travel writer Scott McCartney thought maybe things were getting better in the industry. He's written about it for 20-plus years. Then United Airlines had a customer dragged out of his seat in 2017. Outrage has continued. Some airlines, hotels, and tour companies refuse to pay refunds owed to customers in the pandemic. Complaints have soared. So have punches thrown in cabins, tragically, as he says. He's here to reflect now on his second-to-last column at the Journal as he prepares to retire. Scott, what has stood out over the years?
I think what stood out really is the growth of travel, how much more travel we do, how many more people travel, how much crowder travel has gotten. And not just as sort of in, you know, long lines at Starbucks or whatever, but crowded. And I think one of the huge differences is how crowded it's gotten in the airplane cabin, and we are all pushed closer together. And that has, I think that's had huge consequences for how we feel about travel. So to me, those are the big things. Over 20 years, how we pay for travel has also changed in terms of, yes, fares are cheaper by historical standards when you factor in inflation, but there are baggage fees and fees for this and fees for that. And so the whole pricing model has changed. And I think that's had a big impact on travel.
What would you say is the most eye-opening thing you've covered? What shocked you or what disappointed you maybe as you started to write some of these things?
You know, often it was how flights get canceled, and this is a huge issue for travelers. And some people, are at the gate and say, "Oh, there aren't many people here, so there's not much revenue for this flight, so they're going to cancel it." And often it does. And what's eye-opening are all the many reasons that airlines have for canceling flights, almost none of which directly have to do with revenue. Although It is true that they go looking for lightly booked flights when they have to cancel something because you want to inconvenience the fewest number of travelers and you want to look for the flights where it's easy to reaccommodate everybody. But I've done stories about flights. I was on a particular flight from Europe back to the United States that got canceled, and the airline lied and said they were sending another plane, and they weren't sending another plane, and I knew that was wrong, and ended up they canceled the next day's flight, and decided to try and put two days worth of travelers onto one flight, and so it was a situation where somehow two cancellations make a right in the airline way of thinking. And so it's often been, I think, most informative for me and I think for travelers to really dig into how airline operations work.
Did you ever land in a spot or take a visit and say, oh, my goodness, sorry, Dallas, I'm leaving. I'm staying here. I'm calling the family right now and telling them we need to move here.
You know, I do feel that way about Sydney. I love going to Sydney, Australia. It's a wonderful city. Great food, great things to do, just a fun place. And I've gone there a couple times and thought, you know, this really is wonderful. Oftentimes I go places and I never leave the airport. My children make fun of me for that. I actually in Auckland, New Zealand, and I was going to stay several days in New Zealand, but just as a joke, you know, made sure I went downtown to take a selfie to just show them I had left the airport.
So speaking of your wife, who you lost 18 months ago, roughly, unfortunately, how much did losing her play a role in your decision to retire?
You know, I think it was a factor. It was the column was very very much a partnership for us. It took some wind out of my sails after she died. I think it's, you know, I think a lot of people are feeling the same thing. It's a combination of the pandemic. I've been doing this a long time. And so I think it was in some ways the same kind of burnout that that a lot of us are feeling. In my case, unfortunately, I did have the, you know, the added heartbreak of her passing. And then that definitely caused me to think about what was ahead.
All right, so the final message then, as you begin to put together the final column, is what, Scott?
The final column is going to be it's kind of my review of favorites, best columns, worst columns, bloopers, predictions that turned out to be wrong, predictions that turned out to be right, whatever it might be. You know, I had some really fun experiences in this, fun times, and I think it's I hope readers will indulge me and come along for the ride of what I enjoyed for the last 20 years.
Thanks, Scott. Scott McCartney, travel columnist at The Wall Street Journal and longtime friend of this program. Coming up next, why British actors are playing American cowboys. This holiday season, there's only one best deal when it comes to wireless, and Mint Mobile is it. When you switch to Mint Mobile right now and buy any three-month plan, you'll get another 3 months for free. If you haven't heard how they do it, it's simple. They're the first company to sell premium wireless service online only. So you can order Mint Mobile from home and save a ton. Like phone plans that start at just $15 a month. And all their plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan. Keep your same phone number and all your existing contacts. Choose the amount of monthly data that's right for you and stop paying for data you never use. For a limited time, buy any three-month Mint Mobile plan and get three more months free by going to mintmobile.com/Gordon. That's mintmobile.com/Gordon. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend here. I'm Gordon Deal. Coming up this half hour, losing interest in organized sports, plus playing market analyst. Also, the new slang at the office and unusual American holiday festivals. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, we've reached a dangerous tipping point for children's health. So says sports psychologist Dan O'Neill, author of a book called Survival of the Fit. That's his reaction to an Aspen Institute survey that found 44% of families say their community-based sports program has closed, merged, or returned with only limited capacity, and that many kids have lost interest. Doctor, what's this about?
Yeah, organized sports are becoming less interesting, and as I talk about in the book, there are two main reasons. Number one, coaches, and number two, parents. And that's what's driving kids away. And the problem is, in 2021, they have this great option. They get onto the couch, and they play video games, and they dominate, and they don't need to listen to anybody screaming at them.
I guess it's a no-brainer to think that this is a dangerous thing for kids.
It is dangerous, but we can make it a positive. Organized sports is not getting our kids fit. As you know, we have this obesity epidemic in America, and that's affecting all kids. And in fact, 75% of kids are dropping out of organized sports by the time they're 15 anyway. So our job really as educators, as parents, as community members, is to get our kids fit doing other activities, getting outside and playing more than necessarily playing just organized sports.
It's interesting about the point about coaches and parents you make. I coach high school soccer on the side and attend any clinic, and they always tell you the reason kids play sports to begin with, make friends, have fun, get fit, not win championships, right, at the youth level. And the worst thing about sports, the car ride home because of parents.
Absolutely. And it breaks my heart. You know, I live in rural New Hampshire, and so the high school to field a soccer team needs everybody in that high school, to participate. So when you have a few kids that don't want to participate, they sometimes can't get 11 kids out on the team. Yeah. And that just breaks my heart because these sports are not for parents. They're not for coaches. They're for the kids. They're for the kids, like you say, to have fun and to have an orange wedge at the end of the game and not be berated by their parents.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dr. Dan O'Neill, sports psychologist, also author of a book called Survival of the Fit, which you can find at survivalofthefit.net. And we're talking about kids losing interest in organized sports. So what do you do then? Let's say your town has perhaps dropped it or there's not enough people participating. What do you do as a parent? You tell a kid to run outside or, you know, to be by himself. How do you stay fit?
Right. The very first thing we have to do is make sure we have high-quality physical education for every child, every day, every year of school in America. And that way, for 180 days, these kids are getting their heart rates up for 45 minutes. Then on the weekends, you know what the parents need to do? They need to get the kids out of the house. They need to shut down those video games. They need to take their phones if possible and let them go out and have an adventure. And this is not just rural. This is city. This is everywhere. Because the kids need to go out and play, and that's what they're just not doing. But where they're playing is on the couch, which is the worst possible thing to happen.
I know the easy thing to say here is, well, be a parent. But I mean, what if you've got that the kid who's just so obsessed with technology and whines and fights every inch of the way? How do you begin that conversation to say it's time to get outside and drop this?
Right, I couldn't agree more, because those poor parents are fighting against Mark Zuckerberg and Ronald McDonald, and they have a lot more money and a lot more weapons to fight against you. So what we have to do is, number one, not let the children become addicted in the first place. And that means starting out from the cradle and making sure these kids are allowed to explore and be the animals that they are. And that's what I call physical identity. Once your child is addicted, for those parents out there that are listening that have the 15-year-olds and are nodding their heads, that is a brutal, brutal thing to do. And my only answer to that is, if Mother Nature is given half of a chance, she's going to win the battle. But they do have to get out to Mother Nature, and getting them out there is a bargain that the parents have to try to achieve with their children.
Thanks, Dan. Dr. Dan O'Neill. Again, the book is called Survival of the Fit. Coming up next, predicting the stock market, sort of. So the year plus of remote meetings is ending, right? Time to get back to the office. So about that beard. If you've realized the scruffy look that worked on a webcam isn't fitting the all-business look you're trying to get back to, don't worry. Harry's can help. Harry's crafts high-quality, long-lasting blades and durable weighted handles that make a close, comfortable shave quick and, believe it or not, enjoyable. And refill blades start as low as $2. New customers can get started with Harry's with a starter set, a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover, usually $13 for just $3. The starter set and the incredibly close shave convinced me right away to switch to Harry's. I've been using Harry's for years. I think you'll love it too. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/deal to get their starter set for just $3. 100% satisfaction guaranteed, so you've got nothing to lose. harrys.com/deal to get the special offer. H-A-R-R-Y-S. harrys.com/deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Time to play market strategist. Trying to figure out what sort of U.S. stock returns we can expect over the next 10 years? Well, nobody knows for sure, of course, but we can at least think about it in a reasonably logical way. Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com, helps us with that by using what some folks call the Bogle method. Jonathan, explain.
So back in 1991, Jack Bogle, the founder of Vanguard Group, who died 3 years ago, back in 1991, he created this method for estimating stock returns over the next 10 years. And in essence, what his method does is you look at three component parts. You look at the dividend yield, you look at likely earnings growth, and then you try to figure out what's going to happen to the market's price earnings ratio. So to calculate future returns, you have to take those three components and, in a sense, add them up.
Hmm. And that math is assigned to who? Not me.
Well, to do the math, Gordon, we'll start with the dividend yields. That's the one thing that we do know. So for investors who buy the S&P 500 today, they know that they're going to get 1.3% in annual dividends from those S&P 500 companies. And that is low by historical standards. If you go back over the past 50 years, the average yield for the S&P 500 stocks is 2.8%, or almost twice as high. So for people buying stocks today, they are not starting in a good place.
How come?
Well, simply because stocks are expensive. And as stock prices go up, the dividend yield comes down. Now, one of the reasons the dividend yield has come down, besides the fact that stock prices have been going up, is because companies are also using their spare cash to buy back stock. And that should increase growth in earnings per share. And that's the second component of the Bogle method. So you start with that dividend yield, 1.3%. And to that, you add likely growth in earnings per share. And if you look back over the past 50 years, the average growth in earnings per share has been about 3.3% over and above inflation.
Okay.
You get that 1.3% dividend yield, you get 3.3% real growth in earnings per share. And then if to put it into numbers that people find more easy to understand, we can add in an inflation component. So right now, the estimate for 10-year inflation is something like 2.5% a year. So you take that 2.5% inflation, add the 3.3% earnings growth, the 1.3%, he's still with me, Gordon, the 1.3% dividend yield. And if you add that all up, you put it all together, what we end up with is an expected return for stocks of 7.1%. And this is what Jack Bogle would call the market's investment return. This is the fundamental return you get from dividends and earnings. So we're looking at 7.1% a year.
For the next 10, if we use current methodology.
If we use current methodology, and this is the big if we assume that the market's price earnings ratio 10 years from now is going to be the same as it is today. So right now, investors based on expected 2021 profits are pricing stocks at around 25 times earnings. So if 10 years from now, the market's price earnings ratio is still 25, then investors in the S&P 500 will make that 7.1% a year. And I would actually consider that to be a pretty good return, given how rich stock market valuations are. The fear, of course, is that stock market valuations will contract and people will get significantly less than 7.1% a year.
That's Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com. Coming up next, the new slang at the office. If you've been back at the office lately, have you noticed how work attire has changed? The days of stuffy, uncomfortable clothes is gone, thankfully. And for the new wardrobe, Cuts Clothing is on the cutting edge of casual. They've elevated the classic t-shirt to something that fits the workday, the nightlife, and you perfectly. I know firsthand, I love my Cuts shirts. They're flexible, willing to move with me, and they're tough. Perfect for when I'm in the office or a night out. Get them for yourself now, and you'll not only look good at this year's holiday events, you'll look good and stay comfortable. There's something for everyone on my list and yours, not just t-shirts. There's polos, bomber jackets, joggers, and more. Get them all from Cuts Clothing now, and don't just save time, save money too. Cuts has your holiday shopping covered with a ton of new products and special site-exclusive offers every day in December. Plus, get 15% off site-wide at cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's C-U-T-S, cutsclothing.com/Gordon to get 15% off. Plus, can't miss daily deals. cutsclothing.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend here. As some workers prepare to return to their physical workplaces and many others settle in for a long remote winter, here are the new office buzzwords they may find handy. They're from Emma Goldberg, business reporter at the New York Times. Emma, what should we know?
You know, when people are on that grind, commuting every day, showing up at their desk, they need language to kind of bond with their teammates and also to label the experience and make it a bit more fun and relatable. So they come up with words like zombies.
All right, start with zombies. What are zombies?
Well, you know that feeling when you've been on Zoom call after Zoom call, you're logging onto videos, you're staring at the screen, maybe your eyes are starting to go a little red from just staring. That's when you're starting to turn into a zombie. Some people call it Zoom fatigue. Some people say that you've been staring so long that you're almost zombie-like.
Right. What is Aldesco dining?
You know, that's the experience I think a lot of people have had where you don't quite have time to go out to lunch, so you are scarfing down a salad or something right there at your desk next to your laptop.
Does this stuff, I don't know, does it fade away? Like, what if we all return to the office at some point, full on 100%? That one happens, the lost language?
Well, it's a great question. I think that we needed to come up with these terms during the pandemic because when you have new experiences, you need new language to describe it. But I think we're starting to see as more and more companies are postponing their return to the office, thanks partly to the Omicron variant. I think that, you know, the new style of working, the hybrid style, the remote style might stick around even longer than we'd anticipated. So I don't think this language will be going anywhere anytime soon.
It might be self-explanatory, but explain bookcase credibility.
Well, that's, you know, when you're logging onto a Zoom call and your coworkers can see your background, you might want to put your best books on display so that they know what you're reading. In New York, there was a running joke that a lot of the politicians had The Power Broker behind them, you know, the book about Robert Moses.
Right.
But people have all kinds of books that they choose to display to kind of lend them an air of gravity.
We're speaking with Emma Goldberg, business reporter at the New York Times. She's got a good story that's entitled The New Language of the Office, from Aldesco Dining to Zombies. Explain maskicist.
Well, you know, it's a spin on the word narcissist, although it also sounds a little bit like masochist. And that means someone who actually isn't super respectful of the people around them with their mask. So maybe they lower their mask inexplicably when they need to cough or sneeze. You know, like a narcissist, they're putting their own needs first.
How about polywork?
Well, you know, that's what I think some members of Gen Z might call the side hustle. That's when you've got a couple different jobs going on at the same time because you're working from home and maybe the boss doesn't have such direct eyes on you.
Thanks, Emma. Emma Goldberg, business reporter at the New York Times. Coming up next, bizarre American festivals. Dell Technologies' end-of-year sale is the perfect time to upgrade tech. Save big on the latest computers featuring Windows 11 Pro that easily automate workflows. Don't forget to shop servers, storage, and top-brand electronics with savings up to 45% and all with free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor to help you transform your digital workspaces with comprehensive end-to-end solutions. Find the right tech for your business needs at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for being with us. We'll finish with this. Almost every town and city has a tree lighting ceremony or a Christmas parade this time of year. But just in case you're looking for a more unique celebration, Market Watch rounded up some of the most delightfully offbeat, unexpected, and weirdly specific festivals in every corner of the country, not necessarily tied to the holidays. Here are a couple of them. Number one, in Stowe, Vermont, it's the Vermont Pumpkin Chuckin' Festival. This one's for all those competitive pumpkin chuckers out there. High-powered catapults and homemade medieval slings fill the festival grounds as fierce competition gets underway, each person trying to chuck their pumpkin the farthest. Each year, the pumpkins are chucked farther, with last year's record being an incredible 689 feet. That is more than two football fields. And number two, in Nederland, Colorado, it's Frozen Dead Guy Days. This kooky festival has been held since March of 2002. Coffin racing, a hearse parade, ice turkey bowling, and a polar plunge are just some of the events. That'll do it for this hour. Thanks for being with us. I'm Gordon Deal. And thanks for listening to This Weekend.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.